Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Nall. Nice to have you with us today. From the Cleveland Clinic, published in the peer-reviewed journal Cell, Host, and Microbe, How the Western Diet, that's what most Americans consume on a daily basis, and certainly most children, is found to impair the function of our immune cells, especially in the gut. That is important. I'll explain the problem, what the study found, and the solution. Also, right after that, I'm going to talk about how people ask, how do you support your stem cells? Because as the stem cells stay younger longer, you stay younger longer and healthier. As you don't do the right things, then you promote the senescence or early death of these stem cells, which then manifest as different diseases. So I'm just going to give you a few little oversights, insights, and what to get started on in supporting your stem cells, in effect, to promote healthy cellular renewal. So that's going to happen today. We have a lot on health and healing, but then today also, I'm going to share a commentary. And I want to thank the C.J. Hopkins for writing The COVIDian Cult. I'll share that in my own concept, my own insights on that as well. If time permits, and I don't know that it will, we have a packed show, I'll invite you to call in and share your points of view. Also today, we're going to hear from a Dr. Janci Chun Lindsay. That's J-A-N-C-I-C-H-U-N-N Lindsay, L-I-N-D-S-A-Y. She gave an announcement in the public comment section of the CDC on the COVID vaccine. It was only 3 minutes long, but it was powerful. I didn't know who she was. There are hundreds of thousands, millions of scientists. I don't know who they are. These are mainstream orthodox, and she is mainstream orthodox in toxicology. So there was another little longer interview. We've taken about 12 minutes of that interview. Really important you hear it. Also, we are going to continue what others have refused to do, and that is they have refused to even consider that the COVID virus 19 was formulated through gain of function research in a lab and accidentally released. Now they're looking at that. And since Fauci testified under oath, and we believe that he lied repeatedly, well, other people are now coming on board, like the Los Angeles Times, and says, hold on, let's take a look at this. Good for them. Because more and more, we're going to show you how Fauci has mismanaged virtually everything he's been engaged with, including AIDS. And we actually have, I found a clip from 1992. I just happened to have been there at that meeting where a mainstream Orthodox doctor was calling out Fauci, saying, you've limited the whole approach to HIV and AIDS as a single antiretroviral issue. And it's not. There are multiple cofactors that contribute to the spectrum of a disease. He was right. Thousands of scientists supported that theory, and Fauci shut it all down, and then the media did the rest. Also today, you're going to hear from Senator Bob Hall testifying before committee on the COVID vaccine. And what he says just makes sense. It's just common sense. And why aren't we listening to people like him? Also a person who is just, he's been attacked. He's been attacked by everyone that you can imagine in the media, the mainstream media like the BBC and the scientific community. And yet, Dr. Michael Yeadon, Y-E-A-D-O-N, was sitting at the table of orthodoxy for 40 years. He was with the major pharmaceutical companies. He was in one of the inventors of vaccines. He was the vice president of Pfizer and head of their science division. So he's giving you a shout-out about how you've been lied to. Shouldn't we pay attention? Now, you can agree or disagree, but he's making statements. Those statements are now a matter of record. He is not, in my opinion, a reckless person. So let's take each one of his statements where he said we've been lied to and see, is he correct or not? Let's do our homework. It's not that difficult. Ben Swan, Fauci lied to Congress about gain-of-function research. So you see, we have a lot to share today, and we're going to get right to it. According to a new study, a team of researchers led by Cleveland Clinic's department and MD, PhD, a man named Stappenbeck, have found that a diet high in fat and sugar is associated with impaired intestinal immune cells in this laboratory experiment. The findings published in Cell, Host, and Micro provide insights into pathways linking obesity and disease-driving gut inflammation and have implications for developing targets to treat inflammatory bowel disease in patients. They used 900 patients for this study. Well, here's what they're saying. When you have a typical American diet, just look at a few items. French fries, trans fats, high salt, and the browning of an item, browning of a muffin, a pizza crust, a bagel, potato chips, pretzels, or French fries, as examples, many others, cereals. That browning process creates a chemical, a series of chemicals. They're called acrylamides. Now, the acrylamides are known to really cause inflammation. That's a bad thing, because the more inflammatory cytokines you have in your body, or tumor necrosis factor alpha, or interleukins, the more likely you are to have problems. Now, I first came in touch with this because there was a very famous person in the world of cancer research that I befriended, and the first thing he said is, before I treat anyone's cancer directly, the mass, etc., I make sure I eliminate all local focal infections, meaning if they've got teeth that are rotted, I'll take out the teeth. They need root canal, do that. If they've got arthritis in their joints, and the reason why is that your body only has so many immune modulators. There's only so much of an immune response your body can put forward. The older you get, the less that happens, substantially less. And he said that, therefore, he first tries to turn off inflammation by changing the diet. Well, that makes sense. And then he floods the body with juices, fresh organic juices, that not only turns off inflammation, but it also helps in the cleansing and rejuvenation process, especially good as taking care of heavy metals. It's a form of a weak chelation therapy, weaker than EDTA, ethylene diamine tetracetic acid, that's a chemical that's given to the body, and then over a period of hours, your body excretes the toxins, heavy metals. There's some calcium that will be taken out at the same time, and that's why they measure the urine to see what came out, and therefore what was good came out. You'll put that back in. But there's a weaker form of chelation, and that's with vitamin C and green juices, chlorophyll-rich juices such as spirulina and chlorella, and wheatgrass juice being the top three. And therefore, he found that by putting a person on a several-week program of cleansing and detoxification, you turned off inflammation. Once you turned off inflammation, you then recolonize the gut with good bacteria. And he would show all these different forms of probiotics and prebiotics that he would flood the body's system with sometimes 5-6 times a day. Well, lo and behold, he ended up having the highest proven cancer cure for terminal cancer. It was 16.6%. That was independently assessed by Dr. Audier at Leiden University in a peer-reviewed published paper. That paper was read by, I believe his name was Dr. Robinson, and there was a producer for the BBC, and Higgins, and he investigated, and he did a special. It was called Go Climb the Mountain, and the people at the BBC didn't want to play it because it went against orthodoxy. He didn't use chemotherapy and radiation. He used natural approaches. So what happened was that there was a big, you know, brouhaha, and finally it was forced to be, at a public protest, it was forced to be aired. Once it was aired, then thousands of people wanted to go to this guy. All of his records were open, and I happened to have been there on a couple of occasions, so I interviewed dozens and dozens of patients who came terminally ill, and one woman in particular was there, and irony of ironies, her husband was a leading oncologist at the university down in Texas, as were her two sons, doctors, and she had terminal disease. Her husband wanted to take her on one final boat trip you know, and until she passed, and not give her any of the experimental drugs they all knew would not help her. She chose to go to this place. When I spoke to her, 90% of cancer was gone in her body, and she was there to encourage other people in the routines. If you saw the salads they ate, filled with different types of sprouts and sauerkrauts. And so I give you this as an example why. Because they're looking for a drug. Mind you, you got to follow the money trail, follow where this goes. A respected institution, and certainly the people out at the clinic are extremely, at the Cleveland Clinic are extremely respected. They do good work. They have high quality reputations. So they're telling you, you got a bad diet, you're going to end up with bad immune system because your gut bacteria is going to be bad. But what they don't tell you, which is self-evident that anyone in this audience who listens know, well, get rid of the junk, go detoxify, get rid of all the garbage that creates, you know, problems such as colas, carbonated beverages, energy drinks, alcohol in any amount, caffeine, which is highly anabolic, and get rid of all those foods, the refined carbohydrate foods, because that's where your sugar is. But then also get rid of the meat, because that's a separate type of inflammatory agent, heterocyclic amines. And these are cancer-causing. Now, you put acrylamides and heterocyclic amines together, that's a sandwich, the bun, the bread, and then the meat, that's acrylamides and the acids together. Then you've got a combination that's going to slow down digestion, very little fiber. It's got pathogenic activity, and it can cause all forms of inflammatory responses. So, simple answer, not expensive, not complicated, but now we're going to believe that, well, now that they know the problem, let's wait until they can patent a drug, or some pharmaceutical company will patent a drug, instead of simply saying, get off the Western diet. It's that simple. All right, so let's never confuse the complexity of a problem with the simplicity of its solution. From Richimukan University in Japan comes a study about, well, count your blessings, because short gratitude intervention can increase academic motivation. What do I mean? Because of the ongoing pandemic, lifestyles have been subjected to drastic and dynamic changes, and many work-study-related activities are now carried out online exclusively. Thus, among other complex factors, it's made it difficult for some people to stay focused and motivated. And psychology researchers are trying to find effective and widely applicable solutions to address such problems. In a recent study published in the British Medical Journal of Psychology, researchers at the National Institute for Information and Communications and the University in Japan have explored a very simple, almost self-evident strategy to increase motivation in college students. How? Nurture a positive emotion, gratitude. Yeah, gratitude. Many studies have shown that even short gratitude interventions, which are activities that increase an individual's awareness of feelings of gratitude, can have a lasting positive effect on that person's mood and satisfaction and well-being. Something that simple. Wow. So you've seen the ads on television, and they're good ads, they're correct, where a guy is sitting there and an older woman is there, and he gets up and says, would you like my seat? You think, yes, I would have done that too, you say to yourself, and it makes you feel good. You know, and the guy, I watched this video, it went viral. Some guys wanted to see what a homeless person would do if they found a wallet, so they walked by and dropped a wallet. The guy ran after them and said, here's your wallet. It was filled with money, and they wanted to give him money, and he said, no. They finally gave him $100, and then they went back across street, and this van, they filmed what he did, and he went into this liquor store, but he came out with no liquor, came out with bags of food and shopping cart, went across the street to where there were other homeless people, gave it to him. How does that comport with many people's idea of what it is to be poor, that somehow you've lost your sense of gratitude for having a gift, $100. But also, how do you feel when you've gone out of your way to do something that is just decent? It's the kind of manners and morals and ethics and character that we all grew up poor over the age of 40. and certainly 50. And some kids today have that, and good for them. But a lot don't. Everything is taken for granted. So let's just put gratitude and gratitude journaling back into our lives each day. That can make a difference. Also, how quickly do you become unfit? Well, Anglia Ruskin University took a look at this. Now, we know that getting into shape isn't easy. But after all that hard work, how long do we actually maintain it? Turns out that even the great effort we put into training and taking a bit of time off can mean that we become unfit much faster than it took us to actually get into shape. You lose it faster than you gained it. To understand how the body becomes unfit, we first need to understand how we became fit. The key to becoming fitter, whether it's improving cardiovascular fitness or muscular strength, is to exceed habitual load. What do I mean by habitual load? This means doing more than our body is used to. The stress that this has on our body makes us adapt in a positive way to become more tolerant, leading to higher fitness levels. I remember once my buddy Franco Pantoni and I were running in the park in the morning. We were training for the 40K National Championship. And we were running at a pretty good pace. We were running around the park at about a 5:12 per mile pace. And some guys whizzed right by us going up Cat Hill, which is on the east side. And they were talking. And Franco smiled and said, let's try to catch them. So we ran faster. And we were behind them until we hit 92nd Street, which is a mile. And we were both had to stop. We were out of breath. And those guys, we looked at, they were just talking. And I said, you know, Franco, we have to chase what are called the rabbits, meaning you chase someone faster than yourself because that forces your body to memorize new capacities to create adenosine triphosphate and get your mitochondria working faster. And in fact, that's what we did. We would only train behind people that were faster than we were, the real elites. And because of that, we got faster ourselves in these national championships. In fact, that 40K, I took first place overall, and all people coming in, Americans, about 132, and he got a bronze. Had we not been training that way, we wouldn't have. We would have ended up way in the middle, like 66th or 67th, where we receded. So if you want to get stronger, more flexible, have more endurance and stamina, you've got to push yourself within reason, not excessively, not to harm yourself. But then what they found in this study is that the time it takes to gain it back, once you've lost it, well, they found that it's just 6 sessions of interval training can lead to increases in maximal oxygen uptake, what's called VO2 max, a measure of overall fitness, and improve how efficiently our body is able to fuel itself using the sugar stored in our cells during exercise. And for strength training, some gains in muscle force can be shown in as little as 2 weeks. 2 weeks can change our muscle size, but sometimes it can take around 8 to 12 weeks. Be patient with yourself. Same way with cardiovascular fitness. When we stop training, we really lose our cardiovascular fitness. That's not good. And we need to keep it up. Ideally, you should be exercising 3 hours a week. That's not for racing. That's not for competition. That's just to keep yourself fit. So, simple information that can make a difference. Otherwise, we lose it. And finally, from St. Micah's Hospital, which is at the University of Ontario, in the University of Calgary, they did this study. And here's what they found. And this is very important. Quote, non-drug therapies as good or as better or better than drugs for treating depression in people with dementia. So, the takeaway message is simple. Doctors should consider more social prescribing of non-drug approaches for depression and loneliness. Non-drug therapies like exercising appear to be as or more effective than drugs for reducing symptoms of depression in people with dementia. That was published in the British Medical Journal today. The findings suggest that people with dementia will derive a clinically meaningful benefit from non-drug interventions, and the researchers say doctors should consider more social prescribing instead of pharmaceutical prescribing. All right, something simple, not complicated, but really important. And by the way, from the University of Pennsylvania, this was published in the Journal of Child Psychology and Psychiatry, omega-3 fatty acids lowers childhood aggression in the short term. That's good, especially in any children who are aggressive. Let them try the omega-3 fatty acids. I'm Gary Nall. That's the latest on health and healing. We're going to take a break and be right back. Please stay with us. Nice to have you with us, everyone. I'm Gary Nall. How many of you have noticed that many of the statements made by Anthony Fauci and Bill Gates and others are not in alignment with the actual science? And what does it mean when mainstream orthodox board-certified physicians and or scientists who've never had a controversial statement written about them in their lives suddenly by the tens of thousands coming forward from Stanford, Oxford, Harvard, Yale, and saying a lot of this COVID protocols are wrong. And the media immediately attacks them. The government attacks them. They frequently will be forced out of their job, even tenured professors, and they're canceled. Well, how do we allow that to happen? Shouldn't we be concerned when the leading voices within the scientific and medical establishment say to the establishment, you've got it wrong? Now, mind you, these are two orthodox groups of people. One is basing what they're doing upon pure independent science. The other is based upon political and economic science. It's clear. How do we get to this place? How do we get to where people will not question what they're told to do? Now, I'm pro-vaccine. I just want us to have safe vaccines, and I'm very much for the precautionary principle. Don't use the American public as experimental guinea pigs. Take your time and do it right. After all, we have a lot of different medicines that have been shown by clinical studies to help, and we're not using those, and we could be using those, all right? We don't want to get to where a new study today by Professor Stephanie Seneff and Greg Nye, and she is with Massachusetts Institute of Technology, MIT, in Cambridge, and she's an expert in computer science and artificial intelligence, where she says, and this is in Epidemic DCNs, worse than the disease, reviewing some possible unintended consequences of the RNA vaccines against COVID-19. And then she ends up talking about, quote, Operation Warp Speed brought to market in the United States two RNA vaccines produced by Pfizer and Moderna. Data suggested high efficacy for both of these vaccines, which helped legitimize emergency use authorization by the FDA. However, listen carefully, quote, the exceptionally rapid movement of these vaccines through controlled trials and into mass deployment raises multiple safety concerns. In this review, we first describe the technology underlying these vaccines in detail. We then review both components of the intended biological response to these vaccines, including production of the spike protein itself and their potential relationship to a wide range of both acute and long-term induced pathologies, such as blood disorders, neurodegenerative diseases, and autoimmune diseases. Among these potential induced pathologies, we discussed the relevance of prion protein-related amino acid sequencing within the spike protein. We also present a brief review of the studies supporting the potential, this is very important, for spike protein, quote, shedding, end quote, transmission of the person from the vaccinated to an unvaccinated person, resulting in symptoms induced in the latter, meaning a vaccinated person comes in contact with an unvaccinated person and then causes the unvaccinated person to get sick because of the shedding. Why weren't we told this at the beginning? Why didn't they stop until they can prove this or disprove it? So anyhow, that's just one of dozens of studies coming out by people associated with mainstream orthodoxy, putting everything on the line, and that's important. So we're not being told everything, and I want us to know more. How do we get to this place where we are allowing ourselves to believe whatever the official position is, even though it's constantly changing and has been proven repeatedly to be in error? One of the hallmarks of totalitarianism is mass conformity. Now, what are we conforming to? An official narrative. One of the lectures I did from the recently, just last week, completed anti-aging study where we were on campus for a month, is I talked about why do good people do bad things and smart people do stupid things, and why do people who are very smart frequently conform to official narratives even when it can be shown during that whole process those narratives are in error. All right? And I said it's because of a concept I created some years ago, and I use it to this day, and allows me to really have a better understanding of why people can't change a bad choice to a right choice. And it is because the body and the mind can only process one truth at a time. It is the dominant truth. So whatever your dominant truth is, if it's something positive, then you're going to be coming up more often than not on the outside of something positive. If it's negative, then it's negative. Well, sometimes we revert back to behavior that in the past it was traumatic or negative, and that becomes our current behavior. We are like a victim. Now, even if we're not a victim today, we act like a victim today, and we start looking for other people to share our victimhood with, and hence everybody then begins to associate with us as a victim. Maybe they're victims too. But what if we say that whatever's happened in my past, I'm stronger because of it today, wiser because of it today? And that wasn't a failure in life. That was simply a more bitter and more expensive lesson I had to learn. And hence, today I'm not going to make those same mistakes. I'll make mistakes, but not those. I'm learning. I'm growing. That's a different energy. That's a dominant positive energy. So at any given moment, depending upon where we're at, what we're doing, who's influencing us, what the circumstances we feel we can or cannot cope with, we become either a person capable of transcending the conditioning or abdicating all responsibility and becoming the conditioning. And hence the official narrative becomes our narrative. Now, that's what we're dealing with. A totally delusional official narrative that has little or no connection to reality and that is contraindicated by predominance of facts. And by the way, look at, and this was according to C.J. Hopkins, outstanding article, look at, quote, Nazism and Stalinism are the classic examples, but the phenomena is better observed in cults, in other subcultural societal groups. Numerous examples will spring to mind. The Manson family, Jim Jones, People Temple, Heaven's Gate, and others he mentions, each with its own psychotic official narrative. Helter Skelter, Christian Communism, Xenu, and the Galactic Confederacy, and so on. Okay, makes sense, doesn't it? Looking in from the dominant culture, meaning, or back through time in the case of the Nazis. And I just saw last night Judgment at Nuremberg, really good film, talking about the mindset of the Nazis that cooperated and the judges that cooperated in allowing all this to be legitimate. The law was on the side of the Nazis in the Supreme judges, and the whole trial is based upon how could you abrogate all responsibility to allow your rules, your laws, to criminalize normal behavior or to subjugate people like the Jews and the Gypsies and the Communists to concentration camps and extermination. It's one of the best psychological true enactments I've ever seen. But we have that today. We have it absolutely today. All you have to do is look around. The anti-fascists are acting in the most pro-fascist way. The anti-racists are acting in the most racist way. And yet we're afraid to call it out because we are part of the official narrative. So what people may fail to understand is that to those who fall prey to them, whether individual cult members or entire totalitarian societies, such narratives do not register as psychotic or unreal. On the contrary, they feel entirely normal. Everything in their social reality reifies and reaffirms the narrative, and anything that challenges or contradicts it is perceived as an existential threat. So when I was curing people, and I repeat that, curing people, 18 confirmed, completely medically documented, scientifically proven cures of people with advanced AIDS, and allowing not a single one of 1,200 people being treated at the Tri-State Healing Center with a team of outstanding board-certified physicians, Howard Robbins and Mark Tenenbaum and all the others who were there, and Lou Panisi, who had come over from a very safe and very powerful job at Long Island Jewish Hospital because she herself was there for over 3 years watching this until she finally says, can I be a part of this? But the whole medical team saw people coming in near death and living, and we had an open-door policy. What did Fauci do? Nothing. What did the New York Times do when they were invited? Nothing. The New York Post? Nothing. The Washington Post? Nothing. What about all the AIDS community? Nothing. What about all the AIDS groups getting foundational money? Nothing. So there you have a perfect example of what becomes a cult-like belief system wrapped around Anthony Fauci and his dogmatic mindset and Robert Gallo. So the fact that they weren't curing people were dying by the tens of thousands using AZT with a fraudulent test that was not a gold standard. You could have 70 different conditions and test positive. You could have herpes. You could have hepatitis. You could have malaria. You could have tuberculosis, and you would test positive. Well, what about a person that doesn't have HIV but has one of those, cross-reacts and tests positive? This happened. Commits suicide or starts on immediate high 1,600 milligrams of AZT. Wow. So you see, from my world, I've seen the cult of science. I've seen the cult of cardiology, giving statins where they're not indicated. I've seen the cult of rheumatology, giving methotrexate, giving Vioxx, and over 100,000 people minimally died and yet not taking any responsibility. I've seen the cult of oncology where the drugs that are promoted have no scientific legitimacy, but they're profitable. And yet these people self-righteously will say that the only way of treating cancer is their way and no others are allowed. Hence, one dominant energy becomes the overarching power system and everything else is squashed. So they don't listen. They can't have a conversation. They become defensive and immediately attack. And by the way, if you doubt me, why don't you all today go to prn.fm, and there on the cover, or right down as you scroll down, is The Cost of Denial. By the way, it's already won 35 international film festivals, some of the prestigious film festivals in the world, for Best Documentary of the Year. And this was produced by the Society for Independent Investigative Journalists. So you would think this didn't exist. It does. The proof is there. The patients are there. The journalists are there. The medical records are there. It's there in your face. Will you accept it? If it's there, all the evidence, you will not. If you're already a part of a cult, a belief system, rigidifying every single emotion coming out of you, you can't let it go. And the Democrats and Republicans are two cults, in my opinion. So just understand something. These narratives are invariably paranoid, portraying the cult as threatened or persecuted by an evil enemy or antagonistic force, which only unquestioning allows conformity to the cult's ideology. Now what's happening? Everywhere, tens of thousands of medical doctors, tens of thousands of scientists are saying, I can't believe that we're allowing this nonsense to go unchecked. And they're challenging it with their careers on the line. That takes courage to do. I commend these brave souls coming out of medicine and science and saying, Fauci and everyone else involved, you've got it wrong. And you're smart enough to know you got it wrong. So they're saying, hey, you know, we are now going to offer our opinions against the mainstream culture, the body thetans, the counter-revolutionaries, not just the virus, because the virus is not the most important thing to focus upon. It is who controls the narrative about the virus. The point is not the identity of the enemy. The point is the atmosphere of paranoia and hysteria the official narrative generates, which keeps the cult members or society compliant. For example, it is known, proven unequivocally, 100%, that the original figures were falsified. Anybody who died of almost anything was called COVID. All the evidence is in now. The PCR test was false. And at 35 to 45 cycles, now when you're vaccinated, they give you 28 cycles. Why would they do that? Because at 28 cycles, you'll show that you're COVID negative. At 45 cycles, you're going to be COVID positive. So to gin up the false statistics of how many people are sick with COVID, they say take 40 to 45 cycles. Now you're going to be positive. But this is a false positive study. How do we know? Because I filmed the man who won the Nobel Prize, Dr. Craig Mullis, 1996, and it's up on the internet. Went viral. He's saying it in his own words. Don't use my PCR test to make diagnosis. Not what it's for. And yet now they're giving the PCR test at low amplifications. So everybody is negative. So they say, see, the vaccine worked because they got the vaccine. Now they're negative. No, that's just how powerful they are, forcing their adherents to attempt to reconcile their inconsistency and irrationality, and in many cases, utter absurdity, in order to remain in good standing with the cult leaders. And where do you get your money? From the ultimate cult leader. In fact, Leslie Stahl said in a new interview that Bill Gates is like a modern savior. Okay, maybe he is, because he's the most powerful person on the planet right now, far more powerful than the President of the United States and the people around him, because he puts money in everybody's pocket that he wants to control, and he controls a lot of people. But wouldn't you think that someone who has tried to fire his own partner, without whom he would never have had a nickel and Microsoft wouldn't have existed, Paul Allen, and he said it. We played it yesterday on the air. That maybe he's not a good character. Oh, and what about all the children who died in Africa from his experimental vaccine when he was testing Gardasil? Oh, so those deaths of those Indian children and African children don't count. And what about all the cases he's had to settle for unethical practices, monopolistic practices, and trademark practices? Take an honest look. Oh, let's not even talk about him hanging out dozens and dozens of times with Jeffrey Epstein after Jeffrey Epstein was a convicted pedophile, or all the affairs that he had. No, shows a person a perfect character, right? Anyone else who did that, who wasn't as powerful he was, watch how they would excoriate him for any one of those indiscretions, but suddenly we're supposed to believe him completely, and yet everything he does is of self-interest. So in addition to being paranoid, these narratives are often internally inconsistent and illogical and, well, just completely ridiculous. This does not weaken them, as you might suspect. Actually, it increases their power as it forces their adherents to attempt to reconcile their inconsistency, irrationality, and their utter absurdity. So where do we go? Moreover, the cult leaders will often radically change these narratives for no apparent reason, forcing their cult members to abruptly forswear and often denounce as heresy the beliefs they had previously been forced to profess. You do not need a face mask. Now, yes, you do need a face mask, but you need two face masks. No, you need three face masks, and take a face mask into your shower and kiss through a face mask, even if you've been vaccinated. But get the vaccine so you can have a life that's normal. Where's the science about any of this? It doesn't exist, which causes their minds to further short-circuit until they eventually give up even trying to think rationally and just mindlessly parrot whatever nonsensical gibberish the cult leader fills their heads with. Also, the cult leader's nonsensical gibberish is not as nonsensical as it may seem at first. Most of us, upon encountering such gibberish, assume that the cult leader is trying to communicate and that something is very wrong with his brain. The cult leader isn't trying to communicate. He's trying to disorient and control the listener's mind. You have to understand what they're playing. It's a deadly game. If all this sounds familiar, good, because the same techniques that most cult leaders use to control the minds of the members of their cults are used by totalitarian systems to control the minds of entire societies. Milieu control, loaded language, sacred science, demand of purity, and other standard mind-controlling techniques. It can happen pretty much in any society, just as anyone can fall prey to a cult given the right set of circumstances. It is happening to most of our societies right now. An official narrative is being implemented, a totalitarian official narrative, a totally psychotic official narrative, no less delusional than that of the Nazis or the Manson family or any other cult. Most people cannot see that it is happening for the simple reason that it is happening to them. They are literally unable to recognize it. Do you think the average person that's eating a pizza recognizes the prostate cancer that could happen, the breast cancer that could happen, the obesity that can happen, the diabetes that can happen when you eat enough of those pizzas? Not at all. How about the person eating that big piece of meat, you know, like down in some places, a 16-ounce or 32-ounce? Yeah, what about that one restaurant that the waiters were all in nursing outfits and with stethoscopes because the meal was meant to be a cardiac arrest meal? Do you think anyone thought they were going to actually have a cardiac arrest until a month or a year or 10 years later they did? You're literally unable to recognize in the moment you're in the loss of cognitive awareness. The human mind is extremely resilient and inventive when it is pushed past its limits. Ask anyone who has struggled with psychosis or has taken too much LSD. We do not recognize when we're going insane. When reality falls apart completely, the mind will create a delusional narrative which appears just as real as our normal reality, because even a delusional mind is better than the stark, raving terror of utter chaos. And yet we're creating utter chaos and then conforming to the rules not to become a part of the problem. Stay at home. But we've got a young person who's going to work who may bring back a virus that can infect the older person who's got diabetes, upper respiratory tract emphysema, and cardiac problems. Doesn't matter. All in there. Do it or you'll get arrested. Okay. So they begin by attacking your mind with terror, pain, physical exhaustion, fear. And that will obliterate the average person's perception of reality. And once that's achieved and the subject's mind starts desperately trying to construct a new narrative to make sense out of the cognitive chaos and the psychological trauma of its undergoing, it is relatively easy to guide that process and implement whatever narrative you want. If you're born Caucasian, you're a racist. You can't change anything. Is there any penitence I can do? No. Okay, that is cult behavior. That is racist. That is a narrative that some people, unfortunately, are actually abiding by. And this is why so many people who are unable to easily recognize totalitarianism in cults in foreign countries, cannot perceive the totalitarianism that is taking shape now, right in front of their faces or in their minds, nor can they perceive the delusional nature of the official COVID-19 narrative, no more than those in Nazi Germany were able to perceive how completely delusional their official master race narrative was. Such people are neither ignorant nor stupid. They have been successfully initiated into a cult, which is essentially what totalitarian is, albeit on a societal scale. Their initiation into the cult began last January, when the medical authorities and the corporate media turned on the fear with projections of hundreds of millions of deaths and fake photos of people dropping dead in the streets. The psychological conditioning has continued for months. The global masses have been subjected to a constant stream of propaganda, manufactured hysteria, wild speculation, conflicting directives, exaggerations, lies, and tawdry theatrical effects. And then they bring in the dancing clowns as celebrities who know nothing about anything except how to act, and some don't even do that well, and who are paid astronomical salaries for pretending about life events. And then they start weighing in. You get your shot or you do this. Well, if you get your shot, that's your business. It is not my business whether you take a shot or not. I'm just asking you, get out of your mind control so you can do your research. Look at the peer review, legitimate science-based evidence. Look at the medical evidence from clinicians who are not buying into the cult behavior of Anthony Fauci, and see about a doctor who is treating hundreds, if not thousands, of patients successfully using techniques and drugs, and their patients are living. And that's a person who stands outside of the cult. Watch them be attacked for that, and you're discouraged from even having anything to do with it. So, and now they want to attack the children. The school teachers and the corrupt unions are part of that. All the science, all of it, shows that children are not statistically significant at risk of death or even spreading it. 0 to 19 years of age, survival 99.997. 20 to 49, 99.98% survival. Age 50 to 69, 99.5. And age 70 plus, 94.6. So let's understand something. The official science must be challenged. An increasing number of doctors and medical experts are breaking ranks and explaining how the current mass hysteria over cases, which now include perfectly healthy people, is essentially meaningless propaganda, and we must change. Now we're going to take a break and come back, and I'm going to play just one clip of a whole group, and I'll get to the rest of them on tomorrow's program. So please stay with us.
What I could have done during this talk, and maybe I'll just talk for a minute just to show you, if we've got time, we can come back to it. So I would say, last time I think I spoke to you, James, there was a lot of discussion, I think, about PCR testing, really. Yep. And maybe we talked about lockdown. So I would say every one of the major things your government and SAGE advisors have told you is a lie. Pretty much everything. So let me just whip through it quickly. So PCR testing, they've still not resolved the fact that it has a false positive rate. They simply don't acknowledge that it does, and that means they're able to generate any numbers they like. It's a complete waste of time running this £1 billion enterprise, because they will not run known virus-free samples through the whole chain of custody to show you how many times does that come up positive. You know, is it a tiny number, is it a bigger number? And it could be in any of those. Because they don't know that, you can't net off the gross. And so every single number is unreliable, untrustworthy, scientifically meaningless. And because they're clever on SAGE, they know that what I've just said is true, and they're deceiving you. So we can just forget that. But I would just say quickly, you can't trust this government and its advisors. So that's PCR testing. Masks. Any one of you can do a quick Google search. Effect of masks on respiratory viral transmission. There are loads of studies out there. They definitely do not reduce respiratory viral transmission. And the government knows that. So why are they making children wear them in school? Why do they make you wear them when you wander around shops? You can't trust this government or its advisors. The reason you don't need masks is that, here's what they tell you as well, that one in three people are carrying the virus and can be spreading it without knowing it. That's a lie. It's absolutely clear that people without symptoms don't have enough virus in their body, nor respiratory maneuvers to get it out of their body. In order to infect someone, you have to be full of virus and symptomatic. Those two things occur together, and it's called ill. So if you've got this virus and you've got enough of it to be able to cough it on other people, you're going to feel ill. You're probably staying at home. You might be in bed. And if you're older, you're probably in hospital. So if you don't have symptoms, it means you don't have enough virus to spread it on people, which means you don't need masks anyway if you're feeling well. You can't trust this government or its advisors. And then maybe the fourth one, lockdowns. Of course, we keep being told lockdowns reduce cases. They don't. They've been studied in at least 24 peer-reviewed journal articles by some of the best scientists in the world. As you'll probably know, the states in the United States that locked down or didn't lock down or locked down harder. There's no connection whatever between lockdown and its stringency, that is how much you were meant to stay at home and away from other people, and the outcome in terms of deaths. And I can now explain that to you, and it's taken me embarrassingly about 10 months before I realised it. And it's back to what I just said about you need to be symptomatic before you can infect others. Think about as you move around your day, waving to people in the street, passing someone at work, slipping past someone in the car park, meeting them in the supermarket. All those people are well. If you notice someone that actually looks quite under the weather, you tend to just spontaneously skirt around them, almost the 2 meter rule without anyone telling you. So the bottom line is, out in the community, you don't bump into people who are full of virus and symptomatic because they're ill and you would avoid them, and anyway they are at home. Consequently, when you shut down civil society, you do bugger all to transmission. On the other hand, there is transmission going on. Where might that be? Well, I've just said it. You have to be full of virus and symptomatic. That might be hospital, mightn't it? Do you know recently in a survey, more than 70% of cases seem to have arisen in hospital? I bet you the balance are in care homes. So lockdown could never work because I don't believe there was very much transmission in the community. So they've smashed civil society and the economy, and they know it. You can't trust this government or its advisers. Are you getting the idea now, audience? All of the, and then finally, all of these things are happening all the way around the world, all at the same time. It's a stunning set of mistakes. You'd have to be a coincidence theorist to believe that that was an accident. So it's not a conspiracy theory I'm outlining to you. It is clearly a concerted, deliberate attack using four or five plausible things. And then they've used the power of the mass media to ram it down your neck, and they are preventing any coherent alternative voices that think this is wrong and unfair, people like me. They'll just smear me. And I think if I'm successful enough, they will actually remove me.
He may be right. Mind you, for 40 years, Dr. Eden was one of the most respected scientists in the world, worked for more than 17 years as one of the top scientists at Pfizer. So he found the truth and he had the courage to speak it. Now you can agree or disagree with him. That's up to you to do your homework. But he put everything on the line and they have just destroyed him. Tomorrow, we're going to hear from Dr. Jan C. Chun Lindsay, Director of Toxicology and Molecular Biology for Toxicology Support Services. She holds a doctorate in biochemistry and molecular biology from the University of Texas Graduate School of Biomedical Sciences, MD Anderson Cancer Center. She has extensive years, decades of experience in analyzing the molecular profile of pharmacologic responses. And she's going to tell us about what could the vaccines do that she is concerned about. And should we all be concerned about what it's doing to our body? So that's tomorrow. You won't want to miss that. Now, before we go out today, just want to mention to all of you who take any of the products I originate, it's been out of stock for about 4 months. It's Heavenly Aloe. It's right back in today. Now, this contains 100% aloe vera juice concentrate, and it is, to a lot of people, the best aloe vera in the world. It's certified organically grown aloe vera down in the Rio Grande Valley of Texas, the whole leaf. It is the aloe barbadensis leaf. It also has Bing cherries, raspberries, and black cherries, Siberian Panax ginseng, Gota Kola, wild yam root extract, ginger root extract, peppermint leaf extract. And it's, you know, it's the best of the best. It's back in stock. So if you've been out of it, and we have been, give a call. It's back in stock. 877-627-5065. 877-627-5065. And also we have, we're going to go out with this. Senator Bob Hall speaking before a Senate committee on the COVID vaccine. It's only 4 minutes long. I believe that this needs to be heard. Please listen to what this gentleman has to say.
It is not right to treat unvaccinated individuals as if they are sick individuals or as if the choice they have made is morally wrong. No one in our society should be hindered from participating in business, schools, or our government just because they have made a very personal decision for themselves or for their children not to receive a particular vaccine or vaccines. The mere fact that a person has not received a specific vaccine does not make them a threat to others' health and safety. In contracts, vaccines they have elected not to have may very well be a threat to their own health and safety. It is no secret that the COVID-19 vaccines are not FDA approved. The governor himself recently said, and I quote, "Here is a reality everybody needs to understand. These vaccines have not been formally approved by the FDA. They have not been approved for, they have been approved for emergency use operation, and that means no one can be required to take the vaccine." A little bit of history. In 2019, there were reported to the VARS 203 vaccine deaths. In 2018, 119, and 27, 85. Since December of 2020 through April 23rd of 2021, 4 months, there have been reported 3,362 deaths for COVID vaccine. That's roughly 30 people a day dying from this vaccine, or one of them. Vaccine Adverse Event Reporting System, VAERS, is estimated by most people that follow it as being less than 1% of what actually happens. Compare the COVID vaccine to the mandated vaccine for bacterial meningitis. One person died between the time of 2007 and 2015 for that vaccine. Folks, this is not about vaccines in general. In the 4 months of 2021, we've had more COVID-19 experimental vaccine deaths than all the vaccine deaths for the 15-year period between 1997 and 2013, plus almost 1,000 heart attacks and over 8,000 hospitalizations. In 1976, there were 45 million people were vaccinated for the swine flu. A mere 15 people died, and I don't say that lightly because any death is very regrettable, but the program was immediately halted because it was considered too risky. 53 deaths, and we've had approaching 4,000.
Well, it's over 4,000 as of today. It's approaching 5,000 plus 11,000 in Europe. Just two areas, 15,000 deaths. No drug, no medical application in history has had 15,000 people minimally die of it and still be unchallenged. By the way, just today, a bombshell, Nobel Prize winner Luc Montagnier reveals that, quote, the COVID vaccine is creating variants. The vaccine is. He's the professor of epidemiology. He knows about the what is going on, the antibody-dependent enhancement. And so while it's understood that the viruses mutate, causing variants, he says that from the Institute of Pasteur that it is, quote, it is the vaccination that is creating the variants, end quote. Okay. All right. Let's see where that goes. And he's just one of many people now stepping forward to offer challenges where challenges are appropriate. And by the way, tomorrow I'll be listing all the medications, all the studies, the number of scientists working on those studies who show that other drugs currently available, non-toxic drugs, can make a difference and what percentage they make a difference. That will be on tomorrow's program. Thank you all for listening and have a nice day.